We're holding on Ches Amud Beis, the second Mishnah. We're still in a series of Ein Beins where we have, there's no difference between this and this except for that, which started a couple of blocks ago with one relating to Purim. So now we're continuing with various other halachas that are formulated in that way. The Mishnah says, Ein Bein Sfarim with Tefillin and Mezuzas. There's no difference between Sfarim, meaning specifically Sifrei Torah. Well, so sometimes Sfarim means specifically Sifrei Torah, but over here Rashi says it means books of Tanakh in general. You have Sifrei Torah as in what are used to lane with Sibur, and then you have more generally Sfarim of Torah, Nevi'im, Uksuvim, where you have certain special halachas that apply to them. In particular, as we're going to say in the Gemara, for example, they're metame a person's hands when he touches them by exeter derabanan, etc. So there's no difference between them. The difference is that sfarim, books of Tanakh, can be written in any language, and they have kedusha. Tefillin and mezuzas ein nichtavas el ashuris, whereas tefillin and mezuzas can be written only in ashuris, meaning loshen hakodesh. Strictly speaking, ashuris really refers to the script. The ksav ashuri that we use for writing Sifrei Torah, Tefillin, and Mezuzas. So over here, the Mishnah is using the word ashuris in a bit of a looser sense to mean the Hebrew language, Lashon Kodesh. Reb Shimon Gamliel, I'm after Sfarim, lo hitiru she kosts with other Yavanis. Reb Shimon Gamliel says no. Even when it comes to Sfarim, books of Tanakh, the heter was only to write them other than Lashon Kodesh. The only heter to write the only language in which there was a heter to write them was Greek. No other language are you allowed to write them, or do they have kedusha? Says Reb Shimon Gamliel.
So Ksav Ivri would have no kedusha.
So Ksav Ivri, we're going to actually talk about in the Gemara. On the face of it, we're going to say in the Gemara, yeah, that it doesn't have kedusha. In other words, it has to be in order for it to. So according to the Tanna Kamma, for tefillin and mezuzas to be kosher, they have to be written in ksav ashuri, meaning in the script and language of Lashon Kodesh. Other sfarim, the Tanna Kamma is saying that other sfarim, on the face of it, the Tanna Kamma is saying any language they're written in, and the pashtos, that means also any script, would be metame esiyadayim, would have kedusha, and be metame the hands, as we talked about the other day about that machlokas, about that concept of metame esiyadayim. And Reb Shimon Gamliel will say no, in ksav ivri, no, only in Lashon Kodesh, only in Ashuris, or in Greek, as we'll see in the Gemara. And yes, for example, so according to Reb Shimon Gamliel, it would come out that Sfarim, and possibly even according to the Tanna Kamma, we're going to see in a second in the Gemara, if they're written in Ksav Ivra, they don't have the same level of Kedusha. An interesting point is actually they found among the Dead Sea Scrolls, they found a number of them where the most of the text, they'll have a book of Tanakh, and most of the text will be written in Ksav Ashuri, but the name, the Shem Havaya, will be written in Ksav Ivra. So a lot of the researchers think that the idea was that the people who wrote them take the view that since Ksav Ivri is older, therefore it has a greater degree of kedusha, and therefore they figured it's appropriate to write Shem Havaya in it. It's very likely, based on this, the other way around, that those people, Davka, wrote it in Ksav Ivri in order, it would be the equivalent of when we write a hey and a tick nowadays to represent Hashem's name, in order that it's not considered shameless, in order that if it ends up in the trash, for example, it's not so bad, because it wouldn't have the full degree of kedusha. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. Hol the toferim begidin. So the implication, again, all these ein beins implies, on the other hand, there are certain things in which they were like. So when it comes to that, they have to be sewn up with gidin, with thread made from the sinews of an animal, or the tamei esiyadayim, and that they were tamei a person's hands when he touches them. Zev zeh shavin. The implication is that all of them, sforim and tefillin and mezuzas, are all alike in that regard. Now, a mezuzah usually is not sewn up at all. A mezuzah is usually one sheet of parchment. The Ritva explains, let's say, for example, a mezuzah rips, where the halacha is, you can sew it back together, and then you need to, but the point is you need to use gidin for that. So in that sense, all of them are alike in that. And also, and you know, the Rashba explains, we don't mean, as we had in all the previous Gemaras, we don't mean that these are the only differences between Sfarim, Tefillin, and Mezuzas. Even between Tefillin and Mezuzas themselves, there are differences. For example, what kind of parchment you're supposed to write them on. But what we mean is within the area that we're dealing with over here, as far as how they're written and as far as the dinim of them once they've been written, tefillin, we're looking at something where tefillin and mezuzahs have one halacha and Sifrei Torah have a different halacha, namely the fact that they're different in that according to the Tanna Kamma, they can be written in any language and according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, in only in Lashon Kodesh or in Greek. And then you have, but then you have these other things that are similar across all three of them. So we said, Sfarim nichtavim b'chol lashon chola. We said that Sfarim, books of Tanakh, can be written in any language. So the Gemara says, Ruminu, I have a contradiction. So again, you're telling me being written in any language, again, would mean that they have their full Kedusha and are Metame Eseyadai. But we learn in a Braisa. Actually, most of it is a Mishnah and Masechta Yadayim. Mikra Shekosvei Targum. If you took the parts of Tanakh that are written in Lashon Kodesh and wrote them in Aramaic, the Targum Shekosvei Mikra, or vice versa, you took parts that were written in Aramaic and rewrote them in Lashon Kodesh. So, an example from Chumash, for example, is at the end of Parashas Vayetze, when you have where at the end of the confrontation between Yaakov and Lavan, so you have they set up a monument over there, and the pasuk says Lavan called it Yagar Sahadusa, and Yaakov called it Gal Eid, which means the mound is a witness. So Yagar Sahadusa means exactly that in Aramaic. Lavan spoke Aramaic, so therefore he called it that in his language. And so suppose a person were to write a Sefer Torah. Or write instead of the words Vayikra lo Lavan Yagar Sahadusa, if he were to write Vayikra lo Lavan Gal Eid, then we're saying that wouldn't have the full Kedusha. That's Targum Shekosve Mikra. There are other examples in Sefer Yumi. You have an entire pasuk which is written in Aramaic. We say in Krishma Shalamitza, Kidna Temrin Lohim. In Ksuvim, you have large parts of Daniel and Ezra are written in Aramaic. So those were saying if you were to rewrite them in Hebrew, that's Targum Shekosvei Mikra, or Ksav Ivri, or if you were to write the Torah in Ksav Ivri, which again is this ancient script that they use in the times of the first Beis Mikdash, but not later on it was replaced by Ksav Ashuri, Eina Matame Seidaim. So all those things are not Matame the hands. So we see, in other words, that they can't be written in any Lashon and still have their Kedusha. Amar Rava, like Kasha, can be gufon shalonu, can be gufon shalahet. It depends. Are we talking about that the script that they're using is our script, meaning that they used Ksav Ashuri but used it to write a different language? So, you know, the same way, for example, as you have, Yiddish, for example, is written in Hebrew characters, but it's not Lashon Kodesh, it's a different language. And the same way, there have been many other Jewish languages throughout history that have been written in this way. So the same way you would have, let's say, if somebody were to take and start writing a Tanakh in Ksav Ashuri, but in English, let's say, so they'd be writing using Hebrew letters in the beginning, etc. Then that would be what the Mishnah means, that the Tanna Kamma says that it has Kedusha because it still uses the script. This is the same script as Ksav Ashuri. Kan begufon shalahen, as opposed to the other Mishnah, and Yudayim is talking about where they used the other script as well. So you started writing in English characters and in English words. Amalei Abaya, but Abaya says that doesn't work. But my ukim telahi. So how are you explaining that Mishnah in Yadayim begufan shalahan? So you're saying we're talking about when you wrote it in the non-Ashuri script. You wrote it in Ksav Ivre or in some non-Hebrew script. Well then, my iri mikra shakosva targum, but targum shakosva mikra. After all, then why would the Mishnah there have to mention three cases? One where you have mikra, the Hebrew parts of Tanakh that you wrote in Aramaic, the Aramaic part that you wrote in Hebrew, and Ksav Ivre, why mention those two? My iri mikra shakosva targum, but targum shakosva mikra. I feel a mikra shakosva mikra, but targum shakosva targum nami. After all, according to that, we'd be saying if you're using a different script, then even if you kept the word the same, you're still writing Bereshis Bara Elakim rather than the Aramaic equivalent. You're still writing Yagar Sahadusa rather than the Hebrew equivalent. If you're using a non-Jewish script, a non-Ashuri script, then it still wouldn't have Kedusha. Dokatani Adjich Devenu Ashura Salasefa Badyoi. After all, the Mishnah there continues that it only has Kedusha, it only is Metame Esyadayim, only if you write it in Ashuri script, on a sefer, on parchment, b'dyoy, with ink. So just changing the script by itself is enough to disqualify it from having its full level of kedusha. So not like you, Rav, are saying that. So in that case, according to you, Rav, why does that Mishnah mention the cases of mikra shekosvei targum and targum shekosvei mikra, where you don't even need that, even when you keep the same language, as long as you change the script, then that's enough for it to not have its kedusha. So that answer doesn't work. Ela loy kasha. Rather, we can answer that our Mishnah versus the Mishnah in Yadayim is not a contradiction. Harabbanan, harab Shimon Gamliel. One is according to the Rabbanan of our Mishnah, who say that Sfarim of Tanakh can be written in any language. The other one is according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, who says in our Mishnah that you can only write them in Lashon Kodesh or Greek. So therefore, so the Mishnah in Yodayim is talking about, so since you took the words Bereshis Bara Alakim and wrote them in a different language, for example, or since you took the words Yagarsa Hadusa and wrote them in Hebrew instead of Aramaic, that goes against what Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying, that the only valid languages to write are the original language or Greek. Therefore, that Mishnah is saying they have no Kedusha. Our Mishnah is according to the Chachamim, because the Tanakhama of our Mishnah is the Chachamim who say they can be written in any language. So the question is, that still doesn't work. Okay, but the Mishnah in Yodayim doesn't say anything about Greek, and Rav Shimon Gamliel in our Mishnah says that you can write them in Greek as well. Ela loy kasha, so still not a contradiction. Kan b'sforim, kan b'tfilin u'mezuzas. There's a difference between sforim of Tanakh versus tfilin u'mezuzas. So we would say tfilin u'mezuzas have to be written in ksav ashuri and in Hebrew and the Hebrew wording. And only then are they metamei yadayim. Whereas books of Tanakh, as we're saying in our Mishnah, can be written according to the Tanakhama in any language, and according to Rav Shimon Gamliel in Lashon Kodesh or in Greek. So the Mishnah in Yadayim is talking about tefillin and mezuzas. The problem with that is tefillin and mezuzas, my timer. First of all, let's figure out why tefillin and mezuzas should be different. Evidently, the reason is mishum dekhtiv b'hu v'hoyu b'hava yosin yiyu. Because in them it says that they have to be written v'hoyu advarim ha'ela, that when you're writing the parashiyos of Shema and v'hoyu m'shamoya and whatever else in them, they have to be written b'hava yosin yihu, they have to be written in their original form. Well, we have to ask in tefillin mezuzas, my targum shekosvei mikra ika. Where do you have in tefillin mezuzas a word that originally is written in targum in Aramaic, and you're telling me that the person now changed and wrote in Lashon Kodesh instead? Namely, Bishlema Torah Ika Yagar Sadusa. In the Torah, I understand. If you're writing a whole Sefer Torah, you eventually come to the words Yagar Sadusa. And again, those are written in Aramaic. And so if a person changes and instead of Aramaic writes them in Lashon Kodesh, then we're saying it might not have Kedusha. So it's possible. In other words, there is Targum that conceivably could be written Mikra in a Sefer Torah. Elohocha my Targum Mikra. In tefillin and mezuzas, what words are there to begin with in Targum? The whole thing is written in Lashon Kodesh. Now, a couple of interesting things in that. First of all, Tosfos asks the question that even if a Sefer Torah, now Tosfos holds, and so do a couple of other Rishonim, that even if a Sefer Torah is missing a word here, a word there, as long as it's not three words in a row, then the Sefer Torah is not possible. Well, Yagar Sahadursa is only two words. So what's the problem? So even if you did write Gal Aid instead of Yigar Sahadosa, why should that make the Sefer Torah possible? So Tosfos brings from Rashi. We don't have it in Rashi in front of us, but Tosfos had a Girsa of Rashi that says that it's worse when the words are missing versus when they're altered. Sometimes you have in other areas in halacha, you have such things as well. When something is missing, then fine, we can still, b'dieved, we can still say it's kosher. But when it's altered, then that makes it worse. The fact that you altered the words of the Torah and put in Lashon Kodesh over there where you're supposed to have Aramaic. The Ritva adds that it would be something that the Gemara calls in other places, mezuyef mitochoi. It's like you look at it already and you see the forgery. So like here, we know that a Sefer Torah is supposed to have those two words written in Aramaic, and instead you chose to write them in Lashon Kodesh, so that's worse than them being missing altogether. Tosfos themselves answers, fine, it doesn't necessarily mean that the Sefer Torah is possible because of that. It just means it's a mistake and you would have to fix it. Now, that's all according to Tosfos' Shitta and the Shitta of some other Rishonim, that a Sefer Torah that has mistakes is still kosher to lay in one. On the other hand, the Rambam and a number of other Rishonim hold absolutely not. A Sefer Torah has even one mistake in it, then it's possible to lay from. The halacha, it's interesting, the halacha is basically like the Rambam, which is why we have, every so often, we find times when in shul they find a mistake in a Sefer Torah and they take out and they put away that Sefer Torah and take out another one. On the other hand, it's interesting, the Rambam himself, in a tshuva of his, writes that a Sefer Torah could have a mistake and it would still be kosher to lay in it. So different meforshim and different meforshim talk about did the Rambam change his mind, or what is it exactly about the Rambam? But between that and between the fact that we have the Shitta of Tosfos over here, that does make as follows. For example, when they put away a Sefer Torah and take out another one to continue laying to lean from. Now, if we were to say completely, like the Rambam, that a Sefer Torah that's missing words or whatever is possible completely, then it would mean so let's say you're halfway through the parasha and you discover the mistake. If we went purely according to the Rambam and Yad HaZaka, we would have to say you'd have to start the parasha all over again. What do you mean? You lane half the parasha in a possible Sefer Torah. You can't be Yotza a Kriya B'tzibur that way. But because we have the opinion of Tosfos over here, and also the opinion of Rambam himself in that Shuva, that does provide us a kula. Namely, we don't have to start the parasha over again. We just can continue from where we broke off, because we can say the part until that point, we can follow their opinions with the Eved and say that part of the Kriya was kosher. I know, so you have that, you have other Nachminis in this point. But in any case, so that's one interesting detail over here about the halachas of a Sefer Torah that's found to be possible. Another interesting point is the Pnei Yeshua says, so what was the Gemara thinking when it brought this distinction between Sfarim versus Tefillin and Mezuzahs? Didn't the Gemara know it was the Amoraim know what words you find, what parashiyas you find in Tefillin and Mezuzahs? And they don't find, and we know we don't find any Aramaic words in there. And the answer is, he says, because the Gemara, the Hava, I mean, it was that maybe the word Taitophos is a foreign word. After all, we have, for example, Rashi on the Pasuk mentioned, Tat the Kaspi Shtayim, Paspa Afrik Shtayim, that they're based on a Gemara in Menachos, that the word Taitophos is a combination of two words from other languages, each of which means two, so it equals four altogether. So therefore, the Gemara thought conceivably you could have a case where a person, instead of writing Taitophos, write, let's say, the word Arba or the word Shtayim or whatever. But now the Gemara is rejecting that, because the Gemara is saying the word Taitophos is not necessarily a foreign word at all. It actually may be a word from a Hebrew root. Rashi mentions at the end of Parashas Bo'i, bringing from Menachem over there, from the Medakik, Menachem ben Soruk, who says that the word Taitophos is from a Hebrew root, the Lahatif, which means to speak, because every time a person sees the tefillin, it'll cause him to speak of the Nisim of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So in that case, then there really is no foreign word in that tefillin mezuzahs that conceivably could have been replaced by a Hebrew word. So that's the Gemara's question. Elaha chamai targum ikra. When it comes to tefillin mezuzahs, what targum, what word is there from non-Hebrew languages that could conceivably have been that the sofer might mistakenly put in the Hebrew equivalent instead? So still, how do we reconcile our Mishnah with the one in Yodayim? Where again, our Mishnah is saying that according to the Tanakhama, if it's written in any language, then it has Kedusha. And the Mishnah in Yodayim says that if either the language or the script was changed, then it's possible. So, Ella, like Kasha, can be Megillah, can be Sfarim. Rather, we can answer that there's a difference between a Megillas Esther and other books of Tanakh. Megillas Esther Dafka has to be written in its original language. And therefore, if you write it in any other language or any other script, then it doesn't have Kedusha. As opposed to other books of Tanakh, then there's not that big a deal. And therefore they would still have Kedusha. So the question is, Megillah my timer. Okay, so why would a Megillah be possible if it's written in any other language? Evidently, the reason is because it says in the Megillah that Mordechai wrote to the Jewish people like their script, and like their language. Now, there's no actual pasuk in the Megillah that says. So Agos Marav Ranchburg points out really the actual pasuk that the Gemara is referring to is supposed to be kichsavim v'chizmanam near the end of the Megillah, where it says that Mordechai wrote that they should be observing Purim kichsavim the way it was written v'chizmanam and according to the times that were set up, the 14th and 15th of Adar. So in any case, the point is we see from that word kizmanam, kichsavim rather, that the Megillah has to be written in its original script and in its original language. Well, in that case, my Targum Shekasvei Mikra Ikra. Where do you have, what words in the Megillah do you have that were originally Targum and were saying that that a person might conceivably write them in Lashon Kodesh and then the Megillah would be possible? What are examples of that? Amar Papa, the Nishma Piska Mamela. You do. For example, at the end of Perek Aleph, you have the Piskam of the king will be heard throughout the kingdom. And the word Piskam is an Aramaic word meaning the decree or the word. So therefore, in other words, let's say, so if a person were to write a Megillah, and instead of the word Piskam, he were to write Dvar or Gzeras or something, then that would be an example of Targum Shekasvei Mikra. And again, now definitely with the Megillah, the halacha is that if it's missing words, then it's still kosher to learn from. Unlike with the Sefer Torah, where we said there's machlokes rishonim on that, everybody agrees that a Megillah is missing a couple of words here and there, then it's not possible. But again, like we said before, writing the wrong thing is worse than writing nothing at all. So if he left out the word piskam altogether, it wouldn't be a problem. But now we're saying he changes the word piskam to dvar or whatever, then that makes it possible. Or at least it causes it to lose its kedusha, and it's not metame as he died. So there's an example. Reb Nachman Yitzchok says, I have another example of a word in Megillah that is in the original is in Aramaic, and instead you could have somebody could be putting a Hebrew word instead in the same pasuk. V'chol nashim yitnu yikor l'valein. All the women will give yikor, meaning honor, to their husbands. Yikar, in that sense, is an Aramaic word. The Hebrew word would be covered. So there you have examples of Targum, which conceivably could be written Mikra and would make the Megillah possible. Okay. So far we have one answer that sticks about the difference between our Mishnah and the Mishnah and Yadayim. That one is talking about a Megillah specifically, that it has to be written in Ksav Ashuri and in the original language, Hebrew, where the original is Hebrew, Aramaic, where the original is Aramaic, you can't switch it. Our Mishnah is talking about other Sfarim of Tanakh. Rav Ashi says, I can give you another example. I can give you another answer, rather. Kitanya hi b'shar Sfarim, that Braisa, or that the Mishnah over there in Yadayim, is talking about other books of Tanakh, specifically Nevi'im and Ksuvim, not Chumash, Rabbi Yehuda. And therefore, that Mishnah, which says that they have to be written in Lashon Kodesh, would be according to Rabbi Yehuda. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Tefillin and Mezuzahs ain nechtoven el Ashuris. Tefillin and Mezuzahs specifically have to be written in Ashuris, meaning the script and the language of Lashon Kodesh. Rabbi Seinu Hitiri Yevonis. And our rabbis said that you're also allowed to write them in Greek. So I'm going to interject one second. What do you mean? Before we finish the Braisa, what do you mean the Chachamim allowed you to write it in Greek? Again, it says Vahoyu Advarama Eva. Vahoyu, we said before, means Bahava Yasanihu. They have to be in their original form. So how can you write them in Greek? And they'd still be kosher at Tfilin and Mezuzahs. Ella Ema. So rather you have to fix up what the Braisa is saying. Sfarim Nichtav Mechaloshin, that other Sfarim can be written in any language, but Rabbi Seinu Itiri Yevon. So now we're not talking about Tfilin and Mezuzahs, we're talking about other Sfarim of Tanakh. Can be written in any language, but Rabbi Seinu Itiri Yevonis. Our rabbis said that Greek is mutter. Because Moses says, still that language of the Braisa doesn't work. He tiru miklal the Tanakama also. You say that they allowed it. Does that imply the Tanakama said it's also? The Tanakama just said you could write them in any language. Ella Ema, rather, no, you have to fix it up. Rabbi Seinu loy hitiru, she calls to Ella Yevonis. Our rabbis did not permit them to be written in any language, only in Yevonis. So therefore, so in other words, so the Braiser or the Mishnah from Yadayim that said that they have to be written in Lashon Kodesh is talking to us. So far, we wouldn't know whether that's talking about Sefer Torah or Tefillin and Mezuzahs. But V'tanya, we learn in a Braiser, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Akshi Tiru Rabbi Seinu Yevonis, even when our rabbis said that you're allowed to write them in Greek, they only allowed it by a Sefer Torah, only by the five Chumashim, or Meshumaisa to Talmai HaMelech, because of the story involving King Talmai, who commissioned the translation of Chumash. So therefore, in other words, so we're going to get now into the story and tell the story in detail of what of this translation. This is the famous Septuagint, the Targum HaShivim, because it was done, as we're going to say in the Gemara, by 72 Chachamim. But what the point is, in other words, so the point is, we're going to say, therefore, so according to Rabbi Yehuda, there was a specific heter to write a Sefer Torah in Greek on the basis of that story, on the precedent of that story, that they translated the Torah for Talmai into Greek, but not when it comes to books of Nevi'im and Ksuvim, because they didn't translate those for him. Therefore, we would say, Rabbi Ashi is saying, our Mishnah is talking about Sifrei Torah and Tefillin and Mezuzos, whereas the Mishnah in Yadayim that says that they only have Kedusha if they're written in Ashuris and not if the language has changed, is talking about books of Nevi'im and Ksuvim, where there's no heter to write them in any other language, not even Greek. Tosfos points out that there still might be a difference, even according to Rav Ashi, there still might be a difference between the rest of Nevi'im and Ksuvim versus the Megillah as far as a different halacha. You have a halacha that discusses in Masechta Shabbos, if a fire breaks out on Shabbos, which Sifrei Kodesh are you allowed to save from the fire, even though that might involve carrying them into another chotzer where you don't have an Eruv in common with them or whatever. So it's one thing, Tosfos says, when you have other books of Tanakh, even if they're written in other languages, they still have names of Hashem in them. For that reason alone, you'd have to say them. But Megillas Esther, as we know, doesn't have any names of Hashem in there. So therefore, so only if it's written the way it's supposed to be, would you save it from a fire, otherwise not. Or Gemara, on the other hand, Tosfos says, is not really addressing the question of it having Kedusha. Or Gemara is addressing the question of, is it something that's kosher to lain from? And therefore, to lain from, it might be, so you might have, so in the next perek, we're going to talk about conceivably that you might have, if you have an audience of people who don't know Lashon Kodesh, you're allowed to, in principle, write a Megillah for them in a different language and read it to them in that language, and then it would be kosher to read from. But here in our Gemara, we're talking about that also over here. Are they kosher to lain from in public, or in private for that matter, when they're written in a different language? So Rabbi Yehuda would be saying there's no heter to write them in anything other than the original language. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel would be saying, as he said in our Mishnah, that you could write them in Greek. And in the next parak, we're going to talk about the possibility that maybe even they would be kosher in other languages as well. So what's the story of the Talmai HaMelech? The Tanya. Maisa the Talmai HaMelech. It happened with King Talmai, who was the king of Egypt. He was in the generation after Alexander the Great, his empire broke apart into four major pieces. One of them was Egypt, was ruled over by one of his generals named Ptolemy, and in Hebrew it's called Talmai. And after him, all his descendants also, all of his successors as kings also were called Talmai. So one of those kings, Shekinis Shivim Ushnaim Skenim, he collected together 72 Chachamim, the Ichnisim Shivim Ushnaim Batim, he put them each in a separate room, in 72 different rooms or houses, he didn't tell them why he had gathered them together, because he didn't want them to be able to collude among themselves and make plans in advance among themselves. Then he goes in to talk to each one individually. And he tells them, I want you to write for me a Greek translation of the Torah of your teacher Moshe. So like this, he wanted to see, in other words, or you know, what kind of translations are they going to come up with? Bederach HaTeva, like that, they would come up with 72 different translations. But Hashem put good advice in the heart of every one of them. They all ended up unanimously agreeing on what the translation should be. So they all, even though B'derech HaTeva, different people translate the same thing, they're going to come up with different translations. Here, B'derech Nes, they all came up with the same translation, which showed, in other words, that to a certain extent, there was approval min hashamayim of this project. On the other hand, we say the fact that they translated the Torah and made it available to the Goyim in a way. It's not such a good thing the day they finished the translation, which is Ches Tevis. It says they used to commemorate it as a fast day, and it says that 3 days in Masechta Sofrim, it says that 3 days of darkness came down to the world because of it. So there's some good and some not so good in it. But the fact that at the time they all hiskimu l'das achas shows that Hashem approved of the project, or it shows at least Hashem didn't want. And that Talmud is going to say, look at this, the Torah is a mishmash. Everybody comes up with their own way of understanding it. The Kosvuloi, now they also wrote for him, there's a number of changes that they made in the translation where they did not translate literally. First of all, Elikim Borabere. By the way, there's a short book that's called the Letter of Aristias, Michtav Aristias, because it was written by a fellow named Aristias, who was one of who was a member of this Talmai's court. So he describes, and so this letter describes in great detail how these chachamim were recruited from Yerushalayim, and that it's 72 because there was supposed to be 6 for each shevet, and how the king honored them a lot and asked them a whole bunch of questions in the philosophy of Torah and of life, and so on and so forth. And he tells a whole long arichus. Historians aren't really sure whether this letter is really an accurate historical description of what happened, or whether maybe it was written later on as a piece of fiction. But whatever it is, the core of the story we're saying over here is that Talmai had these chachamim translate the Torah into Greek. So they wrote for him a number of changes in the translation. First of all, the first words of the Torah are Bereishis Bara Elokim. Instead, they translated it writing in the order as if it said Elokim Bara Bereishis. Now, why is that? Rashi says, because Talmai is likely to think that Bereshis, or whatever the Greek equivalent of Bereshis is a deity of its own, and it created Elokim. Chas v'shalom to say that. Okay, Tosfos says, I mean, what do you mean? Bereshis, or the Greek equivalent, is not a name at all. So why would they even think that? Tosfos says, yes, but they would take the view that in something that Hashem dictated and wrote, which is what the Torah is, you would expect that he would put his name first. So you would expect that it would begin with the name Elokim. And instead, if they began with the word Bereshis, then you would say that, okay, maybe the name Bereshis itself is not the actual name of the creator. But it means that there was something preceding Elokim, and then that Bereshis, that primordial thing, created Elokim, Chas v'shalom. And therefore, they had to change it. Therefore, they had to switch it around for him. There is a sicha, the first sicha in Chelek Tesvav, where the Rebbe talks about a deeper idea behind this. For us Jews, it comes out then, the Torah begins with a base. For Goyim, in effect, we're saying their Torah begins with an aleph, because, okay, I mean, the Greek word that they use for Elokim doesn't necessarily begin with an aleph. It begins with whatever Greek letter that the word begins with. But the point is, it's as if, for them, the Torah began with the word Elokim, which represents the idea that Rebbe says, for us Jews, learning Torah is the second thing. The first thing is to connect with Hashem, who gave the Torah, which, for example, we do by saying the bracha on the Torah. You have the expression, the Gemara says elsewhere, that Shalai Berchu B'Torah Tchila, the people of the time of the first Beis Mikdash, did not make a bracha on the Torah, meaning that they didn't connect with Hashem before they were learning Torah, and that's eventually what caused them to go downhill and caused the Churban. So for us, connecting with Hashem through the Birkas HaTorah and Abba V'Yira is the first thing, and learning Torah is the second thing. Whereas for the Goyim, they don't have this concept of connecting with other courses. They don't have to say a bracha before they learn the Torah. Adrabah, their only purpose in learning the Torah is to know what they should and shouldn't do. Really, the whole thing of teaching them the Torah in general is a little questionable. They're allowed to learn the things that they need to know in order to keep the Shev Mitzvah Menayach and whatever. They don't need to learn the whole Torah, but they certainly don't need to connect with Hashem beforehand. Therefore, for them, the Torah begins with an Aleph symbolizing that idea. Anyway, so that was one change they made for him. Another one was, later on in Perek Aleph, you have Hashem says in the Torah, Nasa Adam, let us make man. Now, they didn't want Talmai to be, he's going to be reading this Torah literally. He's going to say, look at that. You Jews yourselves are saying that there are two gods. Now, the real reason why it says Nasa Adam, we know there's a few different things. It means that Hashem consulted Kabiyachol with the Malachim. It means Hashem is speaking in the royal we, etc. But still, they didn't want to get into all that. They know that that Talmai is not going to understand or care about such Midrashim. So they wrote it as if it said, I will make man, the Tzelemon and Mus. The next change was by the original Pasuk says that Hashem finished Ma'aseh Bereishis on the seventh day. They didn't want to write it that way because then it's going to sound like he did Malacha on Shabbos. Now, really, what it means is, as Rashi brings from the Medrash, it means that what Hashem made on the seventh day is Menucha. Until then, the world lacked the concept of Menucha, of rest. And now on the seventh day, Hashem rested and therefore brought that concept of rest into being. But again, Talmai is not going to understand such things. So therefore, they wrote, that Hashem finished on the sixth day, and he rested on the seventh day. The next change was in Perek Hey, Zohar in the cave of Bra'oi, where it says male and female, he created him. And again, they didn't write as it says in the original Pasuk, Bra'om, that he created them, because that would imply that Talmai would misunderstand that to say that Hashem, to begin with, created two bodies, the male and the female, separate. And we know it wasn't so. Originally, Hashem created one double-faced body and then split it in two. So they wrote the word bra'oi to imply that there was one body created to begin with. Next, by the Dura Flaga, by the Tower of Babel, the original pasuk says, Hova Neuda v'Novla Shem Sfasam, let us go down and we will confuse their language. Again, same problem. They don't want it to sound like Hashem, like there's two gods. So they changed it to singular, Hova Neuda v'Evla Shem Sfasam. Next, another one is in Parashas Vayera, Vatitzchak Sara B'Kriveha. So the original pasuk is Vatitzchak Sara B'Kirva, that Sara laughed inside herself and said, how could I have a child? Badoni Zokin. Now, the problem they had with that was that Talmai is going to say, it's not fair. Hashem, afterwards you have Hashem rebukes Sara for that. Why you laugh? Loma Zatzachacha Sara. Yet we have in the previous parasha, it says, Vayipal Avram upon Vayitzchak, and nobody held that against him. So why is it not being held against Avraham and it's being held against Sara? Therefore, they changed it to Bikreveha, that she laughed together with her relatives, meaning, so then Talmai is going to understand, okay, Avraham only laughed in private. Sara laughed about it in public, talking with her relatives. Really, what it is that in the Targum, and explains that, and Rashi explains on the Pesukim, Avraham's laughter was a laughter of happiness. How could it be that this is going to happen? And he was so happy about it. Whereas Sarah's was a laughter of mockery. How it's not even possible. But again, Talmai is not going to understand that. So therefore, they changed it. Next. In Parashat Vayechi, when Yaakov criticizes Shimon and Levi for what they did in Shechem, the original pasuk says, "Ki va'apam hogu ish over tzonim ikru shur." The original pasuk is that in their anger they killed a man, and in their fury they destroyed an ox. So they didn't want to write it that way because then Talmai is going to say, "Look at this, the Jewish people are murderers." So therefore, he changed it. Therefore, all of them changed it to Kiva Apam Hoger Shur. In their anger, they killed an ox. Over at Sonim, Ikru Avos, and with their willfulness, they uprooted a trough, like a trough that the animal eats out of. So Maharsha explains now like this: they didn't want to. In all of these changes, the Chachamim are being very careful to not actually say something that's untrue. Tosfos points that out in connection with another one of the changes that they made. They didn't want to write something that's blatantly untrue. So like this, Rashi explains that it's fine to compare them to animals because, after all, they were the goyim of Shechem, and they are goyim in general, or compared to animals. So when they write that they uprooted a shur, it's not completely untrue. But again, Talmai is not going to realize that nuance. But the point is, in other words, that like this, since it says sure in the second half of the pasuk, so therefore, in other words, it does compare to a certain extent what they did to killing an ox. So what they did is they said the first part of it is being compared to that, and then the second part is being compared to destroying the trough that the animal eats out of. So Marsha explains that what happened was, like this, they wiped out Shechem and the whole, they killed Shechem personally, who had raped Dinah, as well as the whole city of Shechem. Now, you could argue that Shechem himself did very wrong by kidnapping and raping Dinah, but the people didn't necessarily do something as wrong. Now the Rambam says they did. They didn't act. They were supposed to, they have Dinim, they were supposed to act against Shechem when he did that and judge him and punish him, and they didn't. On the other hand, that's not pshat of the psukim over there. Pshat would be that Shechem himself, Prince Shechem, did wrong and deserved to be killed, not necessarily the rest of the people of his city. So they didn't want to write Kiva Apam Hogu Ish, which then is going to be misunderstood that Yaakov only cares. Marsha explained they didn't want to be misunderstood that Yaakov cares only about the fact that they killed Shechem and doesn't care about the fact that they destroyed the rest of the city. So therefore, they changed it to Shur and Avos. And this way, we're going to say that it means that Yaakov wasn't yelling at them at all for killing the city of Shechem. It could be understood that that was done out of justification. They had raped Dinah, they had raped and kidnapped Dinah, and went along with it after all and didn't protest. But rather, he's bothered by the fact that they killed and destroyed the animals and then the troughs that the animals feed out of over there. Really, what they meant is, in other words, that it's the equivalent. Killing Shechem is the equivalent of killing an animal because he's no better than an animal. And killing the rest of the city is like destroying the trough that the animal feeds out of. The next change they made is in this week's parasha. Vayikach Moshe es ishtev es bono, vayakivim al noisi b'nei adam. In this week's parasha, it tells how Moshe takes his wife Zipporah and his son and has them. The original pasuk says vayakivim al hamor. He has them ride on a donkey and he's going to Mitzrayim to confront Paroi. But instead, they changed it from a donkey to noisi b'nei adam, meaning things that carry people, which implies, Rashi says, that would imply a camel. Because otherwise, Talmud is going to say, what's going on over here? Moshe didn't have a better animal available to him, a horse or a camel. So they didn't want to. Now, really, we know why was he taking a donkey, Rashi mentions on this parasha. It was a special donkey. It was the one that Avraham had ridden on to the Akedah. It's the one that Melech HaMashiach in the future is going to ride on. There's a sicha, by the way, where the Rebbe talks about the deeper idea behind that. There's a Rashi sicha about why Rashi has to mention those details, that it means Moshe is hesitant to go to Mitzrayim. So Hashem tells him, don't hesitate, just like Avraham didn't hesitate to go to the Akedah. You're saying that the job is not going to be complete because you're not the Goyal Achron. Don't worry, there is going to be the Goyal Achron, Moshiach, but he's just going to continue what you started. Therefore, that's symbolized by the fact that they all use the same donkey. Anyway, Talmai is not going to understand such kind of things. So for him, they wrote that he carried them on things that carry people, which therefore could imply a horse or a camel or what have you. Next. In Parshas Bo, when the Jewish people are leaving Mitzrayim, the original pasuk says, "Umosha b'nei Yisrael asher yoshu Mitzrayim." The amount of time that the Jewish people have lived in Mitzrayim, shloshim shana ba'arameis shana, was 430 years. Now, the problem with that is the Jewish people were not actually in Mitzrayim 430 years; they were there only 210. So we know what it means is that there was 430 years from the Bris Ben Absarim, from when Hashem had told Avram, Yodaya Tedek, Yehuya Zanacha, until the end of Golos Mitzrayim was 430 years. Talmai is not going to understand such things. So for him, they wrote, Umosha b'nei Yisrael asher yoshu Mitzrayim, uvishar arotzos, and in other lands, so the time that they lived in Mitzrayim as well as in other lands, totaled Arameh Eshtrana 400 years. Now, the 30 years are missing. So Marsha brings two possibilities. Maybe they left out the 30 years as well, because he's going to wonder, in the Bris Ben Absarim, Hashem told them 400 years. How is it all of a sudden here 430? Or the other possibility is they left in the 30 years, because that he wouldn't have a problem with. He could understand that there was time between the Bris Ben Absarim and when Yitzchak was born. Next. In Parashas Mishpatim, it describes the events that happened right before Matan Torah. The pasuk says there, "Vayishlachas Narei Bnei Yisrael," that he sent the young men of Israel to bring Karbonus. Now, who are those young men? They are the Bechorim. But it would make Talmai wonder, what are you sending young boys? You don't have anybody more important to send. So instead, they titched it, "Vayishlachas Zatute Bnei Yisrael," that they sent the Zatute of the Jewish people. Zatute means the important people. And similarly, later on, a few psukim later, when it says the original pasuk says ve'alaksile bnei Yisrael l'shalach yodei, that Hashem did not harm the atzile, the nobles of bnei Yisrael, so they changed it also to fit with that ve'alzatute bnei Yisrael l'shalach yodei. Now, so Tosfos says, so why didn't they touch atzile the first time around? So here's where Tosfos says they didn't want to write something that's blatantly a lie. To put Atzile instead of Nare would be an actual lie. He didn't send Atzile. The fact is, he did send young boys. What it is Tosfos says the word Zatute has a double meaning. It means the small ones. It also means the important ones. So therefore, they could use it in both places. In one place to translate Nare with the meaning of the small ones, and in the other place to translate Atzile instead of Atzile to mean the important ones. And Talmai wouldn't realize the difference. Next, another change they made was in Parshas Korach, when Moshe is telling Hashem, don't accept the Ketores that Korach and his group are going to be offering. Don't think I ever did anything wrong to them. The original pasuk is Loich Hamur Echa Mehem Nasasi. I never took any donkey from them. Now, Talmud is going to say, well, you didn't take any donkeys, you took other things. Therefore, they changed it to Loich Chemed Echa Mehem Nasasi. They changed the word Hamur to Chemed. I didn't take from them any desirable thing. Now, really, what it means is he's saying that before I went with a chamor with my wife and kids to Mitzrayim, and I should have had them reimburse me for the donkey, and I didn't even that. But again, Talmai is not going to understand that, and they already had to change that previous pasuk from chamor to noisim ne'adam. So therefore, in keeping with that, now they changed chamor to chet. Another one that they changed was in Parshas Vaschanan, when the Torah is saying you're not allowed to worship the sun and moon and stars, etc., Ashecholak Hashem alakecha oisam. Now the original pasuk says Ashecholak Hashem alakecha oisam l'chol ha'amim, that Hashem apportioned them to all the nations. Now Talmai is going to say, look at that. It means the Torah is saying that goyim are allowed to worship the sun and moon and stars and whatnot. Really, what it means is Ashecholak is meloshen chalika, slipping. That Hashem made it possible for the goyim to misunderstand and say that they should worship these things in order that eventually they'll get their punishment that they deserve for misunderstanding like that. But instead, since Talmai is not going to get that point, they changed it a little bit. Ashecholak Hashem alakecha oisam lahoyer l'chol ha'amim, that Hashem apportioned them to give light to all the nations. So not that they, so you shouldn't misunderstand that it means that Hashem apportioned them to the nation that they're allowed to worship them. Similarly, in Parshas Shoftim, when it describes a case where Yid is worshiping Avodah Zarah, and the pasuk describes Vayelach Vayavid Elokim Acherim, he went and worshipped other gods, and the pasuk there finishes off Asher Lo Tziviti, which I did not command. Now, what does that mean? I didn't command. Talmai is going to misunderstand. I didn't command them to be created. He's going to say, look at that. There were independent powers other than Hashem that caused things to be created with Hashem not wanting it. Therefore, they added the word La'ovdom, that Hashem did not command that they should be worshipped. And one more, when you get to the list of non-kosher animals in Shmini and in Re'eh, instead of writing our neves, which means a rabbit or a hare or whatever, instead they wrote the words estzira, or the Greek equivalent of estzira seraglayim, the small-footed creature, which means a rabbit has very short front legs as compared to its back legs. Now, why didn't they write us our nevis? Because Talmai's wife's name was our nevis. Gilyon Ashas brings from the Yerushalmi that it was his mother's name was our nevis. Whatever it is, they didn't want it to say, the Jewish people are joking or making fun of me. And they put my wife's name in the Torah among the non-kosher animals. So therefore, they had to change it to Tzira Saraglayim. The Greek word for rabbit is lagos, and actually in secular history you have the first Talmai, the first king of Egypt was named Ptolemy Lagos, and this is his son. So then it would be okay. So it's a family name. It's a name that runs in the family, Lagos, and they're concerned that he's going to think they're making fun of him. So therefore, they had to change. Anyway, the point is, from all of this, we see that there was a special heter because of that story to write the Torah in Greek, but not necessarily books of Nevi'im and Ksuvim. Therefore, going back to what we were saying before, Rabbi Yehuda says there was never any heter to write Nevi'im and Ksuvim in any other language other than Lashon Kodesh. Meanwhile, though, the other Chachamim disagree and say that once it's allowed to write Torah in Greek, then it's allowed to write you're allowed to write in other languages as well, and you're allowed to write the whole Tanakh in other languages. So the Gemara continues. Reb Shimon Gamliel Loim after Sforim Loi Tirushi Kosu El Yevonis. Even with Sforim, even with books of Tanakh, the only heter was to write them aside from Lashon Kodesh in Greek, no other language. So Amar Abba Amar Bechin Halacha Reb Shimon Gamliel. The Halacha is like Reb Shimon Gamliel. The only heter is to write them in Greek. And in fact, you have, for example, there's an interesting thing that's brought in Rishonim, where one time in the Middle Ages, there was a ger. He didn't know Lashon Kodesh well enough, so he wanted to take a translation of the Torah into his native language, or into Latin or whatever, which he was familiar with, and use that to learn the Torah. And Rabbeinu Yoel, one of the Rishonim, told him it's also based on our Gemara over here, that the only heter is to write in Lashon Kodesh or in Greek. By the way, the Rambam says, not even Greek nowadays, because the Greek language itself has gotten corrupted and is nothing like the original pure classic Greek that the Gemara is going to talk about now. With that said, Rishonim also say that as times went on, we have a problem of Eis Lasis Lashem, where if we don't allow the Torah and Tanakh to be translated and written in other languages, people are going to forget it altogether. They're not going to be able to read it because not everybody knows Lashon Kodesh. So therefore, they've developed over time a heter to write and translate the Torah into other languages, which is how we have nowadays Chumashim in English and in many other languages for people to be able to learn from them. Okay, so Amar Rav Yechanan, my time at Rav Shimon Gamliel. Why does Rav Shimon Gamliel say that Greek is special and you can write Kisvei Kodesh in it, but not other languages? Because Amakro Yachta Lekim the Yefes, the pasuk says Hashem will expand the Yefes, the Yishkan Ba'olah Shem, and he will dwell in the tents of shame. So we darshan from that the word Yacht, besides meaning expand, it means that Hashem will make Dvarav Shal Yefes, the language of Yefes. Yefes is the ancestor of many of the peoples of Europe, including the Greeks. So the language of Yefes, you, Ba'ole Shem, will be in the tents of shame. In other words, will be used to learn Torah. So the Gemara says, Ba'ema Gomer and Magog. So who says that not Jaska refers to Greek? Maybe it refers to the languages of Gomer and Magog, who are also descendants of Yefes. The answer is Amar Abchiva Abba. Hainu Taima Yichtiv Yacht Elikim LeYefes, because the expression in the pasuk Yacht, the word Yacht means to expand, but it's also related to the word Yofe, which means beautiful. So it means Yacht Yusei Shol Yefes Yeheva Olay Shem. The beauty of Yefes should be in the tents of shame, namely the Greek language. The classical Greek language is more beautiful than any other language of the descendants of Yefes. So therefore, the pasuk is implying that can be used to write to write Kisvei Kodesh, but not other languages which are not as beautiful. Okay. The Mishnah says, "Ein ben kohen mashuach b'shemen ha-mishcha l'meruba begodim." There's no difference between a kohen gadol who was anointed with shemen ha-mishcha versus one who was appointed by having him wear the eight clothes of the kohen gadol. So what happened was, originally you had shemen ha-mishcha and the kohenim were anointed with it. Yeshayahu, one of the last kings of Yehuda, hid away the Shemen HaMishcha together with the Aron Kodesh and several other things because he knew the Churban is coming soon. So from then on, the Kohenim Gadolim were not appointed by being anointed with Shemen HaMishcha. They were appointed by wearing the eight clothes of the Kohen Gadol and doing the Avodah. So there's no difference between them, says the Mishnah. Ela para ba'a kol mitzvahs, except that only the Kohen Mashuach, only the one anointed with Shemen HaMishcha, brings the para ba'a kol mitzvahs. The Torah describes a case. This is actually Bashkacha Pratis, today's three Parakim of Rambam. That if the Kohen Gadol makes a mistake in certain areas of Halacha, so a regular person, if he's over on those things, would bring a regular chatas. The Kohen Gadol instead brings a par where the blood of it is brought into the Heichel and sprinkled over there. This is one of the ones when we say in Ezer Mekoyman, when we say Parim Anisrafim or Sidim Anisrafim, this is one of those Parim Anisrafim. And there's a whole special thing that he does. He sprinkles the blood on the pareches, etc. So only a Kohen Mashuach does that, not a Kohen Meruba Begodim. Meaning that after the tail end of the first Beis Hamikdash, then they didn't bring that korban anymore. Continues the Mishnah. Ein ben Kohen Meshamesh LeKohen Sha'avar. There's no difference between a Kohen who's currently serving and a Kohen who's no longer serving, a Kohen Gadol, that is, who's no longer serving. So Rashi describes the scenario. Imagine that you have the first Kohen Gadol, what had been serving as Kohen Gadol for a while. Then let's say he became posel. He developed a mum, he became tomei, whatever. So they had to appoint a substitute instead of him. Now the original Kohen Gadol eventually comes back and is ready to resume his duties. So he's now called Kohen Meshamesh. He's the Kohen who's actually on duty serving as Kohen Gadol. And then the one who temporarily replaced him and now has lost that position is called Kohen Sha'avai. So there's no difference between them. The only difference is that only the Kohen Meshamesh, only the current Kohen Gadol brings a part of Yom Kippur. And only he brings the Asira Sefer, the Minchas Chavitin, every day, the Mincha of the Kohen Gadol, every day only he brings. Okay, so the Gemara says, as far as the first part of the Mishnah, about Kohen Mashuach and Kohen Merubah Begadim, hold it, in Pau Yem Kippurim, Asira Sefer, Zevazeh Shavim. So the implication is that as far as the Pau Yem Kippurim, and as far as the Asira Sefer, which I mentioned in the second half of the Mishnah, the implication is that both are Kohen Mashuach, and a Kohen Merubah Begadim, bring those equally. So even though the Kohen and Gadol of the second Bais Hamikdash, for example, are not Meshuach B'Shem and HaMishkan, they still bring the power of Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, and they still bring the Asir HaSa'efa every day. So the Gemara says, in that case, must this in the Loikid of Meir. Our Mishnah is not like Rav Meir. The Ir of Meir, Hotanya, Merubah Begadim, maybe Parah Bar Kol HaMitzvah, Divir of Meir. Rav Meir says that the Merubah Begadim also brings the Parah Bar Kol HaMitzvah. It's not like our Mishnah. But Chachamim and maybe the Chachamim say he doesn't. So our Mishnah is like the Chachamim. Now, my time of the Reb Meir. Why does Reb Meir say that even a Merubah Begadim brings the Par Abar Kol HaMitzvahs? After all, the Pasuk there says, "Ima Koyin HaMashiach Yechter LaAshmas Olam," and the word Mashiach means that he was anointed. So where does Reb Meir get that it should apply to one with Merubah Begadim as well? So the Tanya, Mashiach, when the Pasuk says Mashiach, from that word Mashiach, we would only know that if he's anointed with Shemana Mishcha, does he bring that korban? If he makes this mistake in halacha, Merubah Begadim Minayin. How do we know that it applies also to one who's Merubah Begadim? Tamadlema Ha Mashiach. Therefore, the pasuk says the Mashiach, and Reb Meir is saying that extra hay adds. Therefore, that even one who's not actually Mashiach, even one who's Merubah Begadim, has the same rules. Where the Chachamim disagree, because they say you don't learn from the hay. Okay, the Gemara says, B'mayu Kimna. So what are we saying? We've established then, D'loikid HaMeir. So we're saying, on Mishnah is not like a Meir, but Ema Sefer. But look at the second half of the Mishnah, where we said, Ein Ben Kohen Meshamesh, the Kohen Sha'ovah, El Apar Yemek, the Kohen Ba'asir Sefer, that the only difference between the currently serving Kohen Gadol and the one who was serving and now has been removed from the position, and the only difference is the Pau Yevah Kippurim and the Asirah Sefer, implying Holachol Divrayin Zevazeh Shavim, implying as far as everything else, they're equal, which means, in other words, both of them would have all the other mitzvahs of the Kohen Gadol, neither of them is, including for Orpah, so it would mean both, neither one of them is allowed to marry an Amana, both of them have to marry a Psula, neither one becomes Tomei for their close relatives, etc. But what's important for our purpose in the Gemara is, it sounds like both of them, if they're going to serve in the mitzvah, have to wear the eight clothes of the Kohen Gadol. The general rule is the Kohen has to wear no more and no less than the clothing that's appropriate for his type of kohuna. Otherwise, his avodah is possible. So a regular Kohen wears more or less than the four begadim is possible. A Kohen Gadol wears more or less than the eight begadim is possible. And so we're saying a Kohen Meshamesh and a Kohen Sha'avah, the only difference is Pau Yem HaKippurim Ba'Asir HaSeifah, implying that they're both the same as far as the number of begadim they wear. And that Asan L'Rameir. That part of the Mishnah goes like Rameir. So what is it that we're saying? That the first half of the Mishnah is not like Rav Meir and the second half is. D'tanya. Ira boi psul. We learn in a braisa that if something causes the Kohen Gadol to become fossil, uminu Kohen achatachta, and they appointed another Kohen to serve instead of him temporarily. So then eventually when the psul goes away, rishon chozer l'avodasei, the first one goes back to doing the avodah. Shemi kol mitzvahs kohuna gdola olav divir Meir. Rav Meir says the second one still has all the mitzvahs of kohuna gdola on him, which includes the fact that he does the avodah wearing all eight clothes. Rabbi Yossi says no. Rishon chozer avodasei, only the first one returns to doing the avodah as kohen gadol. Shemi ein yodoi loy l'kohen gadol v'loy l'kohen hadyet. The second one, the substitute, now cannot serve in the Bais Hamikdash as either a kohen gadol or a kohen hadyet. And Rabbi Yossi says, I'll give you an actual example that happened. Maaseh b'Rabbi Yosef ben Ulam mitzipori. It happened with Rabbi Yosef ben Ulam from Tzipori, she'ira by psul v'kohen gadol, that the psul happened to the kohen gadol, uminuhu taktav, so they appointed this Rabbi Yosef ben Ulam as his substitute, and eventually the original kohen gadol was, the original kohen gadol psul went away, and he's able to resume his duties as kohen gadol. The case was brought to the Chachamim. When they said, Rishon Chozer L'Avodah, say exactly that. The original Kohen Gadol returns to doing the Avodah as usual of the Kohen Gadol. So anytime he serves in the Mishnah, he's going to wear the eight clothes of the Kohen Gadol. Sheni, and the substitute of Yosef and Ulam, he cannot serve as Kohen Gadol or as Kohen Hadid. Now, why not? Kohen Gadol Mishum Eva, he can't serve as Kohen Gadol because there's going to be bad feelings between them. The regular Kohen Gadol is going to look and see, one second, I have a rival over here. I have somebody else who's wearing the eight clothes of the Kohen Gadol, just like I am. He's my rival. Who knows what he's plotting to do to me in order to get rid of me, that he can become Kohen Gadol instead. The Yerushalmi actually over here has an expression that you should never allow these two people to even be in the same room together. One of them might conceivably kill the other in order to have the position. So because of Ava, we don't want that there should be two people at the same time wearing the eight clothes. And Kohen Hedyet, the substitute, in this case, Rabbi Yosef ben Ulam, can't serve as Kohen Hedyet. Mishum Malan Bakodesh Bilay Meridin, because you always go up in Kedusha, you don't go down. Which Tosfos says, okay, I mean, in any case, if he wore four begadim, that would be he's wearing too few, because as a Kohen Gadol, he's supposed to wear eight. Okay, Tosfos says that if the Chachamim would allow him to, they would say he's completely deposed from the Kohen Gadol. He goes back to being a regular Kohen, then fine, he'd be able to serve with four begadim. But because Malvin Makodesh blamed it, the Chachamim aren't going to allow that. Anyway, so the point is that, so Rabbi Yossi said, so only the mayor says that this person could conceivably continue serving as a Kohen Gadol. The mayor apparently is not worried about the problem of Ava. So therefore, so he's saying that the second one, the in this case, Rabbi Yosef and Ulam, the temporary substitute, can continue serving as a Kohen Gadol anytime he wants. And then he does, and when he does with the eight clothes. So Reishit Abanan, the Sefer, the mayor. So what do we have? A mission over here where the beginning of it is not like the mayor, but according to the Chachamim, we disagree with him, and the end of the mission is. Amar Rav Chista Ein. So Rav Chista says, sure, no problem. Reishit Abanan, the Sefer, the mayor. Sure, you could have that. Rav Yosef says, you don't need that. Rebbe, our Mishnah, the whole Mishnah goes according to Rebbe. The Nasib La, Libetech Zanoi. Rebbe himself picked in the first part of the Mishnah about the Kohen Mashuach, Melchama, and Merubah Begadim, he preferred the opinion of the Chachamim. He held like the Chachamim, and therefore he put the Stam Mishnah like that. In the second half of the Mishnah, he held like Rav Meir over Rav Yosi, and therefore made the Stam Mishnah like that. Now, Halacha is in fact like Rav Yosi, though, that the second one can't serve as Kohen Gadol or Kohen Hadyet, again, because we do say there is the problem of Eva. However, the Rambam does write, based on other Gemaras and things, that when the first Kohen Gadol passes away, then the second one automatically gets the position. We don't say usually the Kohen Gadol would go to the son of the previous Kohen Gadol or something. Here, where there is already a candidate waiting in the wings who already had the Kohen Gadol before temporarily, then he's the one who gets appointed the next Kohen Gadol. Everyone.
Yashikayach. A wonderful day.